Welcome to the Healing Plate Podcast. Whole food, real nutrients every day. Healing for your body, the way it was designed to be.
What if I told you that lugging around a massive plastic gallon jug of water every day, you know, the one with those motivational hourly tick marks on the side?
Oh, I know the ones, yeah.
Right. Well, what if I told you that whole thing is entirely based on a typo from 1945?
It's wild, honestly.
People are just stressing out over hitting this totally arbitrary daily fluid goal, and they're completely unaware that the genesis of the whole 8 glasses a day rule was just like a clerical oversight, an oversight that the beverage industry just ran with.
I mean, it is arguably one of the most successful, universally accepted health myths of our modern era. We have completely gamified drinking plain water.
Yeah.
And in the process, we've just lost touch with the actual biological signals our bodies send us.
Well, welcome to the special Healing Plate deep dive. This is actually the grand finale of our 6 nutrient series.
I made it.
We did. We've spent the last 5 sessions covering, you know, carbohydrates, fats, proteins, vitamins, and minerals. But today, we are taking on the 6th and probably the most misunderstood nutrient on Earth.
Definitely the most misunderstood.
Right. I mean, it's non-organic, it contains 0 calories, and yet it serves as the ultimate solvent for absolutely everything else. We are talking about water.
And to dismantle the myths here and really get to the physiological truth, we are pulling from a really solid stack of sources for this deep dive.
Yeah, we've got a lot of good stuff today.
We're looking at the National Academy's dietary reference intakes for water, standard physiology data from NIH and Medline Plus, intake statistics from the CDC.
Always good.
Yeah. And some fascinating hyponatremia research from the Mayo Clinic, plus the newly released Dietary Guidelines for Americans, the 2025 to 2030 edition.
So our mission for this deep dive is basically to rescue you from the modern marketing hype, the neon electrolyte dust, as those giant plastic jugs. We really want to help you understand how your body was uniquely created as a brilliant, complex system.
Yes, exactly.
A system designed to perfectly manage water on its own.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because before we even talk about how much to drink, we need to understand the baseline. Like, just how much of our physical body is actually water?
It's a staggering proportion, really. Your adult body is composed of roughly 50 to 60% water by weight.
Wow, over half.
Over half, yeah. Now, that percentage shifts a bit based on your individual body composition.
Okay, how so?
Well, you actually hold more water if you have a higher muscle mass, and slightly less if you're carrying more body fat.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's simply because muscle tissue holds more fluid than adipose or fat tissue. But either way, I mean, you are walking around as a mostly fluid entity.
Which honestly feels a bit counterintuitive because, you know, we feel solid.
Right. You don't feel like a water balloon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I want to press on something you mentioned earlier. We are calling water an essential nutrient, grouping it with things like proteins and vitamins.
But it doesn't give us any caloric energy. It doesn't build muscle fibers. So why is it sitting on the same nutritional pedestal as macronutrients?
Because every single function in your created complex system requires a medium to operate within.
Okay.
Water acts as the ultimate solvent for almost every bodily reaction. Think about a chemical reaction in a laboratory. You can't just rub 2 dry powders together and expect something to happen.
Right, they just sit there.
Exactly. They need to be dissolved in a liquid so the molecules can actually interact. Water is essentially the biological stage where all of life's plays take place.
Oh, I like that. So it's like the transit system. It carries the nutrients we eat straight to our cells, and then it hauls the cellular waste down to the kidneys and the gut for disposal.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And it also makes up the vast majority of your blood plasma. I mean, without adequate water, your blood would literally turn to sludge.
Ugh, that sounds awful.
Yeah, and your heart wouldn't be able to pump it.
Right. And it functions as our internal coolant, too, doesn't it?
Right.
But the mechanism there is fascinating. It's not just that water itself is cold.
No, it's much smarter than that.
Right. It's that when we heat up, we push water out onto our skin as sweat. And then, as that liquid water converts into a gas and evaporates into the air...
Evaporation is key.
Yeah, it literally pulls thermal energy away from our bloodstream.
That heat of vaporization is a brilliant cooling mechanism. And beyond that, water acts as a physical shock absorber.
All right.
And a lubricant for your joints.
So bone isn't just grinding directly on bone.
Exactly. It also prevents your mucous membranes, like your eyes, the inside of your respiratory tract, your gut lining, from drying out.
Because if they dry out.
If those tissues dry out, they can't trap the dust and pathogens we encounter every single day. They turn into sandpaper.
Wow.
And tying this back to our previous deep dive on minerals, water is the vital fluid medium that allows sodium and potassium to conduct those electrical charges.
Right, the charges that fire our nerves and contract our muscles. I do have a specific pushback here, though.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well, we know from our previous discussions that when our bodies burn carbohydrates, fat, and protein for fuel, the chemical byproduct of that combustion is a little bit of internal H2O.
Yes, metabolic water.
Right. So if our body was created as this highly tuned, complex system capable of manufacturing its own water just by digesting a sandwich, why do we need to constantly drink outside fluids?
What's fascinating here is the concept of fluid turnover. It all comes down to a really strict mathematical equation of output versus input.
Okay, math. I can do math.
You can live for rent without food, right? Because your body can draw on stored fat and muscle energy. But you can only live a matter of days without water.
Because the leak in our system is massive.
Exactly. The daily biological loss heavily outpaces that small amount of metabolic production. You lose about 2 to 3 liters of water every single day.
Wow, just on a normal day.
Just a normal day. Mm-hmm. That happens through your urine and stool, sure, but also through the invisible moisture in your breath every single time you exhale.
Like when you see your breath in the cold.
Right, that's water leaving your body.
Cold.
And through passive evaporation from your skin. And keep in mind, that is 2 to 3 liters lost without doing any intentional heavy sweating at the gym.
So if you do not replace that output from external sources, the internal tank just drops dangerously low.
And the whole system grinds to a halt.
Okay, so if we are constantly leaking all this fluid just by existing, there has to be a highly secure biological tracking system, you know, to make sure we don't just dry up and blow away.
Oh, there absolutely is.
Let's talk about the intake mechanics. When I drink a glass of water, it goes down into the gut. But how does it actually cross over into the blood? It doesn't use some specialized protein transporter, right?
No,
it
doesn't need to.
Yeah.
Water is absorbed all along the gastrointestinal tract, mostly in the small intestine, with a little bit in the colon, through a process called osmosis.
Wait, let's clarify that for a second. When you say it follows osmosis, what does that actually look like at a cellular level? Are the cells in the gut pulling the water in like a dry sponge?
Not exactly. I mean, osmosis is basically water's desire to find balance.
Balance. Okay.
Imagine two rooms separated by a door. One room has a ton of salt particles, and the other room is mostly pure water.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Through osmosis, the water will automatically flow through that door into the salty room to try and dilute it until both rooms have the same concentration.
Oh, so in your gut, your body actively moves sodium particles across the intestinal wall into your bloodstream.
Yes. And the water simply follows the salt. Wherever the salt party goes, the water naturally flows right behind it to maintain balance.
That makes total sense. But once that water is inside the bloodstream, someone has to manage the inventory to make sure we don't have too much or too little. The kidneys are doing that math, right?
They absolutely are.
Because I like to think of the kidney as a ruthlessly strict master accountant who outright refuses to let the body run a physiological deficit.
The accountant analogy is perfect. Let's look at how that accountant actually controls the vault, so to speak.
Yeah, how does it work?
The kidney is constantly filtering your blood, crunching the numbers on your fluid and sodium concentrations. When you are getting dry, meaning your blood is becoming too concentrated, a sensor in your brain detects that.
And it sounds the alarm.
Well, first, it releases an antidiuretic hormone called vasopressin.
Okay, so if the kidney is the accountant, vasopressin is like a sudden freeze on all outgoing funds.
Yes.
It travels down to the kidneys collecting ducts, locks the doors to the bladder, and says, nobody leaves. We need to retain every drop of fluid we can.
That is precisely the mechanism. And simultaneously, you have aldosterone, a hormone we actually covered in the minerals deep dive.
Right, the sodium manager.
Yeah, which tells the kidneys to retain more sodium. And because we just learned that water follows salt through osmosis, holding on to sodium means holding on to even more water.
It is a brilliant automatic adjustment.
It really is.
But the accountant can't just freeze outgoing funds forever. Eventually, it needs a new deposit. So when the inventory hits a critical low, the accountant triggers an alarm system. And that alarm is thirst. Thirst isn't just a dry mouth. It is a neurological red flashing light on the accountant's desk saying, we are running out of capital, make a deposit right now.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, for the average healthy person living in a temperate climate, that red flashing light is incredibly reliable.
Really? Just thirst.
Just thirst. The 2005 National Academy's Dietary Reference Intake Report explicitly stated that, on a day-to-day basis, fluid intake driven purely by this natural thirst mechanism, combined with the habitual drinks you consume at meals, is perfectly sufficient to keep the internal accountant happy.
But the accountant can be tricked, right? Because I know if I drink 2 cups of coffee in the morning, I am running to the bathroom constantly. Isn't caffeine bankrupting my water inventory by acting as a diuretic?
This is actually one of the most pervasive myths we need to bust.
Oh, really?
People constantly say coffee and tea dehydrate you. While massive doses of caffeine in pill form might have a slight diuretic effect, the normal amounts of caffeine in your morning coffee absolutely count toward your positive fluid intake.
Wait, really? So my coffee counts as water?
Yes. The volume of water in the coffee far outweighs any minor diuretic effect. Your morning brew is a net gain for hydration.
That is amazing news for my mornings. What about alcohol, though? Does that trick the accountant, too?
Alcohol is a completely different story. It actively suppresses that antidiuretic hormone, vasopressin, that we just talked about.
Oh, so it stops the freeze.
Right. It chemically prevents the accountant from freezing the funds, so your kidneys just keep dumping water into the bladder, regardless of whether you actually have water to spare.
Whoa.
That makes alcohol a true diuretic and a terrible hydration plan. You will consistently lose more fluid than you take in.
Yikes. Okay, beyond alcohol, are there scenarios where the red flashing light of thirst just doesn't work properly?
Yes, certain vulnerable groups require special attention because their alarm system is compromised.
Like who?
Older adults naturally develop a blunted thirst signal as they age. The neurological alarm just doesn't ring as loudly, making them prone to silent dehydration.
That makes sense.
Infants, obviously, cannot verbally articulate that their alarm is going off.
Right.
Additionally, extreme environmental factors like heavy physical labor in the heat, running a fever, dealing with gastrointestinal illness, or even traveling to high altitude, all of those will drastically spike your water bill much faster than thirst can sometimes prompt you to drink.
Okay, so if the human thirst mechanism is this exquisitely calibrated alarm system for the vast majority of us, how did we end up with the cultural commandment that every single person must forcefully chug exactly 64 ounces of plain water every day, even if they aren't remotely thirsty?
The mandate of 8 8-ounce glasses of plain water daily is entirely a myth.
A famous 8x8 rule.
Yes, entirely a myth. And what is incredible is that it has a very clear, documented paper trail. It stems from a deeply misunderstood note published by the Food and Nutrition Board all the way back in 1945.
I am still struggling to understand how a single memo from the 1940s spawned an entire modern lifestyle of people carrying around gallon jugs. How did this happen?
Well, the 1945 note suggested a general total daily intake of about 2.5 liters of water.
Okay.
But the very next sentence in that exact same paragraph explicitly stated that most of this quantity is already contained in prepared foods.
And people just missed that part.
For some reason, the historical game of telephone completely dropped that second sentence. Mm. Human psychology loves a measurable, actionable task, right?
Oh, absolutely. We love checking boxes.
And the beverage and bottled water industries capitalized on that truncated quote. They realized they could sell immense convenience by convincing people they were chronically dehydrated if they didn't manually drink 64 ounces of plain bottled water a day.
Let me be absolutely clear about this for anyone listening. Do not shame people who genuinely enjoy using a water bottle. Like, if having an insulated cup on your desk makes you happy, enjoy it.
Of course.
But we absolutely must shame the idea that missing a tick mark on the side of a plastic jug constitutes a medical emergency.
Harvard Health and a massive consensus of modern clinicians echo this exact sentiment. There is zero clinical trial evidence stating that every healthy adult must drink 64 ounces of plain water on top of their coffee, milk, and daily food.
Zero evidence.
Zero. If you drink when you are thirsty, eat a varied diet, and have pale yellow urine, your complex system is functioning exactly as it was created to function.
Okay, that raises the question of what the actual scientific recommendations are today, if not 8 glasses. What do the National Academies actually say we need?
They establish what is called an adequate intake, or AI, for total water. For adult men, it is 3.7 liters, which is about 125 ounces.
That sounds like a lot.
It does. And for adult women, it is 2.7 liters, or about 91 ounces. Those needs increase slightly during pregnancy to 3.0 liters, and they jump during lactation to 3.8 liters to account for milk production.
But the crucial word there is total water. That doesn't mean drinking 125 ounces from a tap.
Exactly. Total water means fluid from all sources. Crucially, roughly 80% of that total generally comes from beverages of all kinds, which breaks down to about 13 cups for men and 9 for women.
And the rest.
The remaining 20% comes directly from the solid food you eat. And when we look at the CDC's National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey data, U.S. adults generally hit these adequate intakes on their own without needing a spreadsheet.
You mentioned urine color earlier as a metric. We've all heard that clear urine is the ultimate sign of health. But why does urine have color in the first place, and what is it actually telling us?
Urine gets its yellow color from a pigment called urobilin, which is a natural waste product from the breakdown of old red blood cells.
Okay.
When your body is conserving water, the accountant concentrates the urine, making that urobilin pigment appear dark amber. That is a clear sign to drink.
Right.
When you are well hydrated, there is enough water to dilute the pigment, resulting in a pale straw yellow color.
So having crystal clear urine all day long is not a biological trophy.
Definitely not.
It just means you are forcefully diluting the urobilin by outrunning your natural thirst for no physiological reason.
Precisely. You are just giving your kidneys extra busy work to excrete the unnecessary volume.
Let's loop back to that 20% of our total water that comes from food. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
If you contrast the quiet, unassuming hydration power of like a simple cucumber against the loud, neon, multi-million dollar marketing campaigns of things like cellular water pitched to people sitting at desk jobs, we can literally eat our water, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The beverage industry wants you to forget that hydration isn't exclusively liquid. Think about iceberg lettuce, tomatoes, citrus fruits, melon, and berries.
All super juicy.
Right. They're heavily composed of water. Even things you wouldn't necessarily associate with hydration, like yogurt, a bowl of soup, or cooked oatmeal, contribute massive amounts of fluid to your internal ledger.
We talk a lot on the series about the importance of a whole foods diet, and this is another incredibly strong argument for a plant-forward plate. It is essentially a water plate.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, ultra-processed foods, like potato chips or packaged cookies, they're baked or fried until the moisture is gone. We could call those dry calories. But an orange or a scoop of black beans cooked in broth, those are wet nutrients. You are hydrating while you eat.
This concept aligns perfectly with the newly released Dietary Guidelines for Americans for 2025 to 2030. They emphasize that hydration is critical, but they direct people towards still or sparkling water and unsweetened beverages.
Makes sense.
Interestingly, they highlight that milk and fortified unsweetened plant milks are highly efficient because they pull double duty.
Providing fluid and nutrients?
Yes, key developmental nutrients. 100% fruit juice, however, should be a very limited guest at the table because of the dense sugar content.
I noticed the guidelines don't just tell you what to drink. They are incredibly specific about what to avoid. Why the hard line against sports drinks and sodas for everyday hydration? It's all liquid, isn't it?
It is liquid. But the added sugars in sodas and energy drinks can actually disrupt optimal hydration. Not to mention the metabolic consequences of liquid sugar.
True.
The guidelines advise against beverages loaded with artificial flavors, petroleum-based dyes, and non-nutritive sweeteners simply because they are unnecessary chemical burdens on the body's filtration system.
So if it looks like a glowing neon science experiment, it probably shouldn't be your primary hydration strategy.
Probably not, no.
But what about the sports drinks? The entire marketing pitch is that they are full of necessary electrolytes.
Sports drinks exist for a valid biological reason. Human sweat contains sodium. If you are doing heavy, hot, prolonged physical effort like playing a two-hour tennis match in August, you are losing both fluid and sodium, and you need to replace both.
Right, in extreme situations.
But if you were just taking a brisk 30-minute walk around the neighborhood or sitting at a keyboard, a sports drink is just candy water.
Candy water.
Yeah. Your body has plenty of sodium reserves. You do not physiologically need those targeted replacements. Electrolyte packets, alkaline water, and trendy cellular water are mostly just plain H2O, wrapped in incredibly expensive marketing designed to exploit our misunderstanding of how the body works.
That makes total sense. And this is exactly why those blanket one-size-fits-all gallon challenges you see on social media completely fail the test of medical reality.
Oh, absolutely.
Hydration is incredibly individual. I mean, A clinician might actually strictly restrict water intake for a patient with heart failure or specific kidney diseases because their damaged system simply cannot process and pump the extra volume.
That's a very real scenario.
But that exact same clinician might prescribe significantly more water to a patient with a history of kidney stones just to keep the urinary tract constantly flushed. You can't hack a complex system with a viral internet challenge.
Exactly. The context of the individual system is everything.
Okay, so we have established the body's ideal balance and how the internal accountant automatically manages it. Let's look at the extremes. What actually happens when this complex system is pushed to its absolute limits? What happens when we completely ignore the thirst alarm?
Let's start with a deficit. Mild dehydration occurs when you lose just 1 to 2% of your body weight as water.
Which isn't much.
No, but because water makes up your blood volume, losing fluid means your blood volume drops slightly. Your heart has to work harder to maintain pressure.
I see.
Which leads to those classic symptoms. Sudden fatigue, a dull headache, poor concentration, and a noticeable drop in physical endurance.
I feel like people throw the word dehydrated around whenever they have a mild headache at the office, but clinical severe dehydration has to be much more catastrophic to the system than just feeling a little tired, right?
Yes. Severe dehydration is a true medical emergency. When the fluid loss is massive, your blood pressure plummets dangerously low. Your brain doesn't get enough oxygen, leading to severe confusion or delirium.
Terrifying.
The kidneys begin to shut down because there isn't enough pressure to filter the blood. This often happens when extreme environmental heat meets hard physical exertion without fluid replacement.
And you can't just hand that person a glass of tap water, can you?
No. At that severe stage, plain water isn't enough to correct the cellular imbalance. They require oral rehydration therapy.
What's that?
It's a very specific, medically formulated ratio of water, glucose, and sodium designed to actively pull fluid back into the tissues, or they might need intravenous fluids administered by a professional.
Wow. But on the exact opposite end of the spectrum, too much water is a very real, very dangerous thing. How can water, the biological solvent of life, become toxic?
It is a rarer condition, but highly dangerous, known as hyponatremia. The Mayo Clinic lists drinking excessive amounts of water as a primary cause.
How does that happen?
This happens when you forcefully drink enough fluid to literally outrun the kidney's maximum excretion rate. The clinical term is the inability to excrete free water, which simply means water that doesn't have any electrolytes or solutes in it. If you chug more plain water than the kidneys can process in an hour, that excess free water backs up into your bloodstream.
And we see this a lot in endurance sports, right? Athletes who have been incorrectly coached to stay ahead of their thirst and just keep chugging massive amounts of plain water from aid stations while they are simultaneously sweating out all their sodium.
This raises an important question about how we treat people in distress. Because when that excess free water floods the bloodstream, it severely dilutes the remaining sodium levels. And remember osmosis from earlier.
The water wants to find balance.
Right. Because the blood is now highly diluted, the water aggressively rushes out of the bloodstream and into the body's cells, which have a higher salt concentration. This causes the cells to physically swell up like water balloons.
Wait, if the cells are swelling with water, doesn't that include brain cells?
That is exactly the danger. Your brain is encased in a rigid bone skull. It has absolutely zero room to expand.
Oh, no.
When brain cells swell from hyponatremia, the intracranial pressure rises rapidly. This leads to profound confusion, nausea, seizures, and if not treated, it can be fatal.
That is terrifying, especially because a confused, nauseous athlete looks identical to someone suffering from severe dehydration. How would a bystander know the difference?
They often don't, which is why well-meaning bystanders sometimes make a hyponatremia situation fatal by forcing an overly hydrated, confused athlete to drink even more plain water, thinking they were helping.
Wow.
It is why athletes doing long, intense endurance events need a meticulously calculated, scientifically tested hydration and sodium plan, not just a dare to chug as much as possible.
Is there an official limit on how much water is too much, like we have with vitamin toxicities?
Interestingly, unlike certain fat-soluble vitamins, there is no official tolerable upper intake level set for water in the DRI tables.
Really?
The absolute limit is simply your specific kidney's mechanical ability to excrete that free water. For a healthy adult at rest, that capacity is quite large, up to nearly a liter an hour. But it is certainly not infinite.
So for the vast majority of us who aren't running ultramarathons in July, the golden rule remains. Just trust the neurological thirst mechanism.
Exactly. The body knows what it is doing. It was created as a complex system to manage this perfectly.
Wow. Okay, as we wrap up this final deep dive, let's take a look back at the entire healing plate journey we have been on together. Over 6 sessions, we have explored the foundational pillars of human nutrition.
It's been quite a ride.
It really has. We learned that carbohydrates are our everyday, readily available fuel. Fats provide dense, slow-burning energy and literally build our cell membranes. Proteins act as the structural letters that our DNA writes with to build tissue. Vitamins serve as the specific molecular tools required for repair.
Yeah.
Minerals are the literal elements of the earth, acting as our structural foundation and electrical wiring. And finally, water, the vital invisible solvent where every single piece of that biological magic actually happens.
When you step back and look at it, it all comes down to trusting the system. Drink water when your alarm tells you to. Eat wet whole foods to support that hydration naturally.
Trust your thirst.
Trust your thirst. Unless you fall into one of those vulnerable categories we discuss, like an infant, an older adult, or someone who is acutely sick. Leave the modern commandment of the 8-glass myth and the incredibly expensive cellular waters right there on the grocery store shelf.
Amen to that.
And, of course, it always bears repeating. If your clinician has placed you on a specific fluid restriction or a targeted replacement plan for a medical condition, that individualized medical advice always beats a general deep dive.
So what does this all mean for you? It means you do not need to turn daily hydration into a competitive sport or a stressful math equation. But I do want to leave you with one final, slightly provocative thought to mull over.
Oh, let's hear it.
We have spent this time talking about how our bodies were created as these highly tuned, brilliant, complex systems designed to manage fluid perfectly based on environmental stress and natural thirst. But think about how we live today. We spend our days waking up in climate-controlled, air-conditioned homes, driving in air-conditioned cars, and sitting in perfectly stable, climate-controlled offices.
True.
How might our incredibly modern, artificially comfortable indoor lifestyles be quietly dulling our natural thirst signals without us even realizing it? Next time you pour a glass from the tap, well, drink up and think about it.
Thank you for listening to the Healing Plate Podcast. Eat well and be happy.